Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio. Peace, everyone, and welcome to the Edible Activist Podcast. I'm your host, Melissa L. Jones, broadcasting live from the lobby of The Line, D.C. This podcast is where dynamic people of color in the food and agriculture space share their personal food journeys, passions, and perspectives that stem from the land, all exemplifying the spirit of activism in their own edible way. Let's get started. Peace, everyone, and welcome to the Edible Activist Podcast. I am your host, Melissa L. Jones, broadcasting live from the lobby of The Line, D.C., here on Full Service Radio. And I'm really excited today, as always, because I have an awesome guest in the house, and she's giggling already. I have Brittany Drakeford, everyone. Oh, I love you, Brittany.
Thank you. I love you too.
So let's let the folks know who you are. So Brittany Drakeford is a hipster philanthropist. I like that. You know, I really do like that. And green thumb enthusiast, embracing her Black culture all at the same damn time. Right? Yeah. She is a proud sixth generation native of Prince George's County, where she resides and is dedicated to her beloved Cottage City Community Gardens community. Brittany is a 2017 Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Culture of Health Leader and a PhD student at the University of Maryland studying urban and regional planning and design. She loves art, growing great food, and organizing initiatives that uplifts communities and celebrates our Black history. And that doesn't even scrape the surface of who Brittany is. I mean, you go on her LinkedIn, it just makes you embarrassed. Like, let me get myself into some extracurricular activities. Good grief. Welcome to the show, Brittany.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about being here today and having the opportunity to share my story, my family story with you. And really, again, thank you for your vision and your intuition to create a platform like Food Talks DC and Edible Activists to capture, you know, Black history that's happening today and to also preserve it for the future. So thank you for your work.
Absolutely. Brittany is a ray of sunshine. Like, seriously, like, you really are. I'm around a lot of people and a lot of great people, but you are a great person. I want to remind you of that. I love being around. I'm not around you that often, but when I do, like, the energy is like on some other. Like, you are just a dynamic person. She's so smart, y'all. Good grief. Teach me some things. All right, so here's what's going to go down. We are going to expand upon your roots that stem from Prince George's County, because Brittany and I have this awesome conversation in the garden some months ago, which we'll talk about when we were working on the Pippin Prepper project. And then we're going to learn about your role with Cottage City Gardens, which is this wonderful oasis that sits in this quaint suburb of Cottage City, Maryland, guys. It is beautiful. I love it. And we're also going to unearth your connections that you have made to the land, especially through, like, your studies and, you know, your art and just all the other great things that you have going on. So let's get to it. You are a sixth generation Prince George's County, not PG. Y'all better not say PG, okay? Prince George's County. All right.
Right.
Put some respect on that name. Okay. Tell us a little bit about your family lineage.
Yeah. So my family is from Prince George's County, Maryland. Born and raised there, mother's from there, my mother's mother, my mother's mother's father, my mother's mother's father's grandfather. So just going back and exploring that history. So I was able, through some census records and doing some deep diving in old family obituaries, was able to identify my great-great-grandfather, whose name is Robert Herrod Sr. He lived over in the Capitol Heights, Central Avenue neighborhood. had a farm there. He had a farm in the county.
He was a farmer, but I didn't know he had one in Cap Heights.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Had a farm there, had about 6 acres of land, worked the land, and really tried to create this community for his family. His son, Robert Harrard Jr., which is now going towards my direct lineage, also was a farmer. He was served as a trustee on the Highland Park Rosenwald School, which is a historic program that was started by the Ridgely Rosenwald Foundation, really to help bring education to poor, rural, predominantly African-American communities across the South. My great-grandfather, Clarence Harrod, then my grandmother, Marion Harrod, and then my mom, Sharon Reeder Drakeford, which is how I came to be once she got married to Calvin Drakeford. And so that was just a little bit of the history. My family was very integral in the development of the Ridgely Church, which is also along the Central Avenue corridor,
okay,
and which serves as a National Historic Site, actually by the Historical Trust.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so they have a lot of connection with that, with the county and all different areas.
Oh, my gosh. Now, do we still have the 6 acres of land over in Capitol Heights?
Oh, so we do not still have the 6 acres of land. When I last looked at it, actually...
Who took it?
The county. So that's actually some of the additional work that I would like to do some research on. It's really finding out what was that history of the land. How did it end up getting sold?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been able to pull some deeds and look at some transfer papers.
Pull some deeds, y'all. I didn't fail to mention because I want to get into this. So Brittany is a senior planner, all right? And she does a lot of zoning. I mean, I'm telling y'all, all right? So she pulls some deeds.
I did. I wanted to see what happened.
Yes.
There are all these stories, and I guess from my perspective, as a child, I was very observant. I listened to what my mother would say. I would listen to what my grandmother would say, and not just always from the perspective of, oh, you should do this or you shouldn't do this, but what were the stories that they were telling me by not directly telling me? So as we would drive along Sheriff Road, this is where our family used to own land, but they lost it to tax sales. And so I remembered those things, mm-hmm, as I got older. And so now that I have the resources and I'm able to figure out where I can find out more information,
yeah,
I started doing my own digging to try to figure out, well, what actually happened? And so there's some pieces there that I'm still trying to put together and make all the connections, but wanted to understand a little better what is the actual story about how this family who owns 6 acres of land,
right,
how it ended up being that many of them ended up moving to public housing projects because that land that they had acquired is no longer in their possession.
Oh my gosh. Will you please keep us updated on this? Like, are you going to turn this into some like documentary or... I'll help you, girl. I'll help you.
Well, hopefully it'll be a dissertation.
Hello. All right. We got PhDism over here. Okay.
Yeah.
That is awesome. So what was that? What was that entryway into, you know, digging into some of your roots and your lineage and your story? Like, was there one specific thing that kind of just popped out to you from a story that your mother said to you? Or like, what made you say, you know what? I'm going all in. I need to find out.
Yeah, so my family, shout outs to my parents. They have always been, and they were always very black, pro-black oriented. And so as a child, they enrolled my sister and I in Black History programs. We would be responsible for preparing Black History reports at church. And they wanted to make sure that we understood our history and our culture by any means. Like, I went through and I read my mother's high school yearbook, and she said she wanted to help. At 17 years old, her goal was to help improve the Black community, and this was in the 70s.
Whoa.
And so, I mean, and their perspective in doing it was using the family unit as a way to build the Black community, and how can you use kinships and families and relationships and community to do that? And so that's really where their perspective was. So you read books about African American history, go to the museums. If there was a documentary, if there was a play, we were at Arena Stage, we were at the Kennedy Center, we were there hearing it, and there was also a report that was going to have to be produced after.
Mom and Dad were not playing. You're going to know your history.
They were not.
You know what? I probably would have rather been doing that than being in church every Sunday and every day in the choir, singing in a choir that I couldn't sing in. Take me to a play or a theater or something, you know. Connect me to my roots. That is wonderful.
Yeah, so
you don't hear a lot of those stories at all, Brittany.
You don't. And I mean, I really am thankful for my parents for sharing that with us. But then also, I understand that there is a responsibility for me to also then to take those same experiences and then share those experiences with the young people that I work with my younger cousins, with the neighbors in my community. And so that's really how a lot of it stems for me.
Oh my gosh, just stand next to her, y'all. She's a book. Flip them pages. I mean, I remember when you and I were just standing in the garden talking, and there's a photo actually on our Instagram page, and it really is a true reflection of just like how engulfed I was in those conversations. Like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Like, she's amazing. You're amazing. So, Brittany, you are a North Carolina A&T grad.
Aggie Pride.
All right. Here she go. Here she go.
Aggie Pride is worldwide.
All right. You know, they don't play. They don't play. And it is, you studied, was it art there?
So, I actually studied, it was African American history.
That's right.
With an art focus.
Okay.
And then also I did a journalism and mass communications program.
Okay.
So, it was a combination of both of the two.
So the interesting thing is that, and we're going to talk more about this later on the show, but Brittany and I connected because she was part of Xavier Brown's Soulful Project with the Pippin Peppers. And so it was there where I learned that you actually studied a bit about Horace Pippin in college.
Right. Yeah. So
it was so interesting to make those connections.
Yeah. I mean, and that's exactly how it was for me when I found out of this artist who I had looked at some of his artwork, was viewing his artwork, and was required again to write more reports about about this black art.
Do
black
you have copies of these reports?
I do. I'm pretty certain my father has them too, because he's like, "Oh,
I want to see these.
I'll definitely find them. I'll pull them out." But in class, we studied about Horace Pippin as this artist who had lost an arm in the war. And then and Xavier and I actually used to work for this organization called the African American Atelier, which was an arts-based organization in Greensboro, North Carolina, where we were doing really cool arts-based programs and projects, after-school projects, working with students in black communities, bringing in amazing black artists, Gail Fulton Ross, Cynthia St. James, and interacting in that scene. So when I came back to the DC area, Xavier was really the one who got me into the concept of like growing my own food.
Who also went to North Carolina A&T.
He did. He is also an Aggie as well. Yes. And then we talked more about this idea. And then Xavier was saying, "Oh, Brittany, have you heard about Horace Pippin? I've been doing some research into these peppers that he was trying to use." And I was like, "Oh, Horace Pippin? Horace Pippin is the same artist."
Yeah, he's an artist, right.
And he was like, "Oh, well, he's also the seed saver." And for me, it really talks about this intersection and how black people really integrate themselves in all aspects, how multifaceted we are. So we're not just people who are farmers or growers. We're also artists. We're also authors. We do all these different things in space. We're engineers. We're builders. And so
we're scientists.
Right. Yeah. And so to see this all together in this one man of Horace Pippin, and how that legacy, his legacy of seed saving, had now been transferred down to younger people in this generation, it was just like super exciting.
So I was
just like, "All right, Xavier, I'll grow some peppers." And so I was like, "I'm not necessarily certain if I know how to grow the peppers, but..."
They were beautiful. I witnessed them. I saw them, okay?
Thank you. Yeah, our motto was like, if we have soil, sun, and water, it'll work out.
Hello. Hello. Y'all hear that? Y'all hear that? Soil, sun, and water. It'll work out. Talk to me a bit about, because you are, like I said, you are a green thumb enthusiast. At least that's what I'm going to label you as, but you are, okay? Talk to me about how you blend your African-American studies and your passion for art and land work together.
Yeah, so when I was an undergrad, I had started this initiative called Greensboro's Heart. And the idea with Greensboro's Heart was that you would take something that was green and full of life and vigor. So I was really thinking about like the passion of people and borough being the neighborhood. So what do our communities look like? And combining those two things with heart, which is like the central life form, which at that time I thought was centrally focused around art. I was also doing a lot of work back at home, even though I was working in Greensboro. I was doing some work back at home with African American history, work for the Prince George's County's Black History Program, and was still collecting these stories. And at that time, I only thought about community strictly in the framework of people. So there was like this social community. It wasn't until I traveled to Cuba, I had a trip to travel to Havana with a friend, and I saw this exhibit called Hotel Habana, which was talking about the relationships between America and Cuba, the United States and Cuba, and how that might change some of the culture in Cuba in a different level once more corporate organizations come into the country. And I realized at that moment, I was like, oh, this is like the concept of gentrification, but it's just happening on an international scale. And so at that point, it clicked, like all these different connections made sense. And I said, oh, like this is like art, right? But in order to have a place, so in order for me to have a culture, in order for me to create art, in order for me to have a social community, I have to have a space. And without having a space or a physical place where I can connect that,
you can't create.
I don't have a place to create. And when we look at gentrification, when we look at colonialization, when we look at all of these forces that are happening, we're really seeing not just like my physical space being removed, but this ability for me to now not be able to participate and actively engage in the culture that I've created. And so that was really for me when it connected. And so I'm like, I have to have people and people have to be in place. And without having a place, I can't exist as a person. So it really for me was that perspective that makes it all connect. Like I can be creative. I can also be spiritual. But I also have to have a physical place where I can do all those things.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Do you consider yourself an artist?
Not really.
You are. You were just spitting some rhymes to me. That you are an artist, okay?
Well, thank you. Not really. But and so for me now as I transitioned, and the reason why I decided to go back to school to study urban planning was because I recognize that there are policies that are so integral to shaping our communities. Mm-hmm. And while I enjoy growing and I love growing and I love building community, I love doing a lot of the work that I'm doing, I also understand that there has to be a political framework and understanding of how those laws and legislation is passed. And also how do you shape it so that people can preserve their culture moving forward in the future?
Absolutely. Okay, guys, this is Melissa L. Jones here, here on the Edible Activist Podcast, broadcasting live here at the Line Hotel DC on Full Service Radio. And I am chatting with Brittany Drakeford, just an all around amazing person, green thumb enthusiast. I just label her an artist. She's an artist. She's a curator. She's passionate about community. She grew up in a household that was definitely connected to knowing your Black history and just being able to attribute that to your parents, you know, and growing up and being in the car and just hearing those stories. And, you know, she's a sixth generation Prince George's County native. All right. She dug into them records. Where was this land at, y'all? Who owned it? Where did it go? We're going to find out where it went. We're going to find out who took them 6 acres. We probably already kind of know who took those 6 acres. But anyway, but I connected with Brittany a few months ago when she collaborated with Xavier Brown of Soulful City and on his Pip and Pepper project. And she was one of the growers of these wonderful peppers that turned into this awesome sauce. And she's also part of this really great community called Cottage City Community Gardens, which we're going to talk about after our break. But anyway, thank you for sharing all that. I swear she's a walking book. But we are going to take a very short break and we'll be right back, guys. All right. You're listening to Perfect Day, produced by Artists Authentic. For more of Authentic's work, visit allornothingstudios.com. welcome back, everyone. Melissa L. Jones here on the Edible Activist Podcast, broadcasting live here at the Line Hotel DC, here on Full Service Radio. And I have been chatting with the amazing Brittany Drakeford, aka the hipster philanthropist and green thumb enthusiast. That's your official title, all right? She's all also right. A senior planner, so don't get it twisted. This girl has a brain. She has degrees after degrees. She's a PhD candidate. We've been diving into a bit of her family lineage. I mentioned a couple times about this wonderful community where you and I connected, which is the Cottage City Community Gardens. So I definitely want to touch on that. I absolutely love that space.
Thank you.
I love it.
We're working to try to cultivate a space that is inclusive of all, that people feel comfortable, safe in, mm-hmm. and really fosters this community that we want to see in our neighborhood.
Talk to us about about how it got started.
So the Cottage City Community Garden actually started in about 2010 with a grant helped through the Kaiser Permanente Foundation. There were a few community members, so I'll be honest, I was not there at the beginning. But there were a few community members who got involved, who wanted to see a community garden as a way to really bring fresh produce to neighbors who didn't have access. And so that's how they started. It was a group called the Port Towns Youth Council. I always give them their credit. Amazing group of students that work with Reverend Gail Addison with End Time Harvest Ministries.
Oh, okay.
And they actually helped construct the beds, build the beds, help secure funding, all those types of components. In about 2014, I was working with End Time Harvest Ministries as a program director, and I lived in the neighborhood, but I had never even been to the garden. And so, right, shame
on me. We ain't judging. No, we're not judging. Listen.
So I came out there with Reverend Addison and the students, and we were working and we were building. And after I saw how excited the parents, I mean, she would bring like 50, 60 children and parents out to this garden. And after I saw how excited they were, I said, I need to also get involved and participate. And so since about 2014, I've been a pretty active member in the garden, helping to coordinate the garden. What are the pieces that we need to make this garden happen, grow and flourish? How do we make sure that we are being inclusive? Because mm-hmm. we can say we want to be inclusive, and having a goal of that is one thing, but if we're not actually having actions and behaviors that mimic that, then we're going to struggle. Also then looking at the garden as a space for designing a new collaborative model for organizations. And so one of the things I have been brainstorming in my free time, I do a lot of writing.
What free time do you have?
I have some. Okay. I try, early in the morning, late at night, but really trying to brainstorm what does a organization that's shaped around equity look like. So something that is not this hierarchical model, but something that is more concentric, where people have this shared power. So what would that structure look like? So that's some things that we've been working in the garden, and as well as just having fun. We had a garden tour about 2 weeks ago with the Prince George's County Food Equity Council.
Fun.
One of our gardeners is a chef, so he made paella over like an open flame.
I'm sorry. Where was that? Did I see that?
I'll make sure we send
okay. out. Okay. I don't like to miss stuff like that, okay?
Yeah,
I show up.
All right. I will make sure. Everyone loved it, so we're probably going to do it again. We've been working with the Food Equity Council to talk about doing another session around like dismantling racism, and really using the garden as a platform and conduit for that.
Wonderful.
So we've been, the garden has really been growing and flourishing, so we're just always thankful for that.
Oh, and it's so beautiful. Y'all, go to my Instagram page. You gotta scroll down a bit, but there is a photo with Brittany and myself in the garden. It's just it was, first of all, it was a beautiful day. The mosquitoes were tearing us up, but it was beautiful. Listen, this is what it is in this type of work, okay? But it really is an amazing space. One of the things that I remember from our conversations in the garden is you talked about the diversity and how like the crops that you grow just really represent the diversity of the neighborhood. And, the first time I came to the garden, I met your other awesome community gardener, Natasha, who's from Mississippi.
Yes, yes.
So as soon as I heard that accent, I was like, yay. But you have a garden that grows crops that really reflect the diversity in that community.
Yeah, and that's what, I mean, that's what our goal was. So the Cottage City Garden, or that's what our goal is, not even was. So the Cottage City community, our tagline motto is United in Diversity. And so we have residents from all across the country, well, all across the country and all across the world. We grow callaloo in the garden. We grow like Indian long beans. We grow bok choy. We grow any different
black-eyed peas.
Varieties of peas that have long have almost been extinct, almost been deemed extinct. We grow in the garden through our Seed Savers program. So we're growing a lot of different things from all over the world. And we're really just hoping that our garden can then reflect like what we want our community to be. How can we have this space where people might have conflicts, but we also figure out how do we work through those conflicts? How do we manage them? How do we grow food that is indicative of our cultures, while then also making sure that other people can grow food that's indicative of their culture as well. So just always being mindful of that and really trying to create a space. And it requires, you know, sometimes it requires a lot of work.
Yeah.
It requires some pushback, but it's been a blessing and an amazing opportunity for us to all work together and learn from one another.
Now, when can a sister get some black-eyed peas?
So I have put some peas down, so they will be growing.
And all right. They ain't for everybody, so don't y'all just show up, okay? This is a community garden, all right?
Yeah, last year, I think we had about 3 different varieties of black-eyed peas that we put down, some purple hull. So Natasha, who's from Mississippi,
shout out.
She loves purple hull peas, and she's always talking about purple hull peas and wanted to see them grow, so we grew some of those this year.
Y'all got some okra, too, growing on?
We do. We have 2 or 3 varieties of okra growing. Of course, we have watermelon growing. We have onions. We have beans. We have bok choy, kale, cabbage, collards, radishes. It's a great mix of.
And aside from the produce, like the flowers. Oh my gosh, you guys had the most amazing flowers. Just so awesome.
Yeah, so we grow. So Denise Hamler and Anne Riviera, they're 2 of our gardeners who try to take care of our flowers every season. They
said try. Eat that?
No, they do.
That's all
they
good.
They do.
They're beautiful.
Yeah. So, and every year they're like, look, we're going to plant our pollinators. Our pollinators need to be in the ground. They're like, we're not just growing food.
Yeah.
We want to also make sure that the creations that come in here also have something nice to look at, or they have you know things to get their nectar from. All those.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know all the biological correct terms. I'm a planner, not a sciences.
Listen, so. You can't do it all. You cannot do it all. No, it is a wonderful space. I just felt like I was in some type of like little movie or something. It was just like, oh, as soon as we were at the very end, is that a dead end street? And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like the secret garden over here.
It is. We're right next to the Anacostia River.
Sure are.
Which is why we probably have so many mosquitoes.
But, oh, yeah.
But it's still a great space to garden. We have an orchard, so we grow peaches, blueberries. We have some service berries, figs.
My mother's going to be texting me. She does it every time after every show. I want figs. When are we going to get some figs?
Hopefully our figs should come hopefully by August, if not July.
Uh-oh.
We had service berries growing this year. We had strawberries. We have raspberries. So there, we grow a little bit of everything. Whatever we can find seeds for, we'll put them in the ground.
No seed left behind.
None at all.
Talk to us a bit about, so for those who were not privy to the project that we collaborated on with Xavier, and so Xavier of Soulful City really initiated this really awesome community, not venture, but he brought growers of color together to produce fish pepper for his product, his Pippin sauce. And I collaborated with him and just really capturing some of the narratives and faces of some of the growers who came together and to say, listen, you know what, I'm gonna grow these seeds, we're gonna grow these peppers. And he had this big production, and he had this huge launch event, which was phenomenal. And Brittany was one of the growers. And I just remember our conversations, and you really just reflected a lot on how just how wonderful it was that Xavier brought everyone together and just really connecting, you know, what we're doing presently, you know, currently to our history.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So as a planner, I'm always thinking about the future. And I also recognize that the moments that we have and that we create right now today are the moments that we're going to have in the future. And so for Xavier to bring together these different growers from throughout the D.C. area with all different backgrounds, even though we're Black, we all have all these mm-hmm. different backgrounds, mm-hmm. these different stories, and to bring them together to like continue to pass down seeds for the future is just yes. phenomenal. So growing the peppers for the garden was that for us was like a completely new experience.
Yeah, because you had never grown them before, right?
We had never grown the peppers before. The gardeners, we were immediately, as soon as we found out about the peppers, people started researching. They wanted to learn more. We started doing write-ups about
Beautiful.
It. People were doing more reports. Reports always come up in my space. About the peppers. And so when we have those 50 students who come with the Port Towns Youth Council, because they come twice a year, we were also talking to them about the peppers, and this is what we're growing. And then other people's families saying, oh, we used to grow this in my home country, or we grew this in my neighborhood, or I remember these peppers. So this was a great experience, not just for us to grow something collectively together for a purpose,
right.
but then also it gave us an immediate opportunity to then share that with other people. And that was something that had really connected our gardens in a way that we hadn't connected before.
One of the things that you mentioned to me during our conversations in the garden is that you said a lot of times when we think about Black food culture, which I 1,000% agree with you, we tend to view this in a negative light, you know, but this really brought forth an extremely positive experience.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are times when people think about Black food, and you can read about it. Oh, it's soul food making Black people unhealthy.
Right.
It's soul food doing this. And it's like, well, you know, soul food is one component of our food.
Yeah.
It is the celebratory food that we would eat. We're going to have, it's Christmas, it's a holiday, we're going to eat this food. It's not something that we would eat every day.
Exactly.
On a random day, any day of the week, more likely someone would have peas and some greens. Maybe there would be a small portion of meat. More than likely, it may not have been.
Fat back.
Right?
Turkey neck.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I knew coming up.
Yeah, exactly. And so our food culture is really something that has always been sustaining for us and has been healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading an article the other day about the history of watermelons and, well, what is this stereotype and how did the stereotype about watermelons being then attributed to Black people? What does that look like? But like watermelons, really, that was something that was easy to grow. It represented freedom for a lot of African Americans.
Right,
because
exactly. Yep.
It represented freedom and it provided so many different types of nutrients for people to eat. So just thinking about how our culture has been demonized on so many different levels, and then also how our food has then also now been demonized against us and been weaponized against us as well. And so through growing food and sharing the stories of family and then other people's families, how can we take our history and while we think our history has been a history of deprivation, or we might think that our history has been a history of completely negativity, how can we use this history to then leverage it to be able to create a whole new community or a whole new culture or a whole new place for ourselves in the future. So that's something that I really, you know, hope to do.
That's that futuristic thinking. Brittany's all about that futuristic thinking. I'm not mad. I am not mad. So we're going to wrap up in a few moments, but I am not going to leave this podcast studio without bringing up Juneteenth.
Yes.
Which is, and we almost started to have this show next week. It almost worked out. It almost did.
The ancestors would have been like, oh, yes.
Yeah, oh, yes. They're here. I know that is, first of all, it should be a very important, mm-hmm. you know, moment in time for everybody, you know. But I know, and like I said, you guys just, y'all have to check out Brittany. She's going to tell you her website, how to connect with her. The girl has been involved in so many things. But I know that this moment is extremely important to you. Yeah. And you've even, have you like organized events and seminars or just certain convenings around this? Or
When I used to work with the Black History Program for Prince George's County, I was actually one of the team members who would help, you know, develop and organize our Black History Month, not just our Black History Month event, but also our Juneteenth events. And so it started from the Concord Manor, Concord Mansion, which through some help, I think that might be actually where my ancestors were enslaved. It's still a mansion that still exists today. But that was where the county held one of their first Juneteenth celebrations off of Walker Mill Road.
Wow.
And so I started that day. And then a few years after, I would continue to work with the Juneteenth program. But Juneteenth, you know, freedom is all, and liberation is always something that's exciting for me.
It is. It is.
So that is.
Are we really, really free, though?
Not until you have a place of your own and a space of your own.
And she said it in Brittany's words.
That is when you are free to be able to have a right to place and to do the things that you are able to do and to practice your culture in a manner that is appropriate for you. That is when you have freedom.
Oh my gosh. Can you like trademark that? Like that, like what can you do with that?
It's come from me, from other people, so it's not just my own. So.
Oh my gosh. One last question for you before we get into our rapid fire. Your parents, I need to meet your parents, first of all. They should have came into the show with you. You're an amazing person. I'm sure they are like 10 times more. Well,
they are.
They're more amazing than you, but they birthed you. They played a very, aside from parenting, they really just implanted so much history and knowledge and connection into you growing up and just making sure that you were always connected to your Black history, to your Black culture. And, you know, to say that you have a sense of pride about your history is really just an understatement, honestly. Mm. Like, it really just is an understatement. And with that said, what do you want to leave behind? Not that you want anywhere in time, so, you know, but I do like to talk about this legacy work because what you're doing is just so rich and you're just full of richness. So what story do you want to leave behind for your friends, your family, your kids, if you have some one day, if you want, you know, you don't have to, no pressure. what is that? What does that look like?
Yeah. So this is a great question and something that I don't think as I'm doing so much work, I don't think I always get to consider the future for myself and how that might be preserved in the past.
You always thinking about the future, about everything else, about
yourself.
Right.
But I think it would definitely have to be this idea that people have the ability to be able to do what some of the things that they find impressive about what I do. So if there's a problem in your neighborhood, there's a problem in your community, do you feel like you have the ability and have I provided and at least given some kind of energy or some kind of compassion or some kind of excitement where you feel like, oh, here's a person who did this in their neighborhood. You can do it too. This person had the courage to step out and do this, and I can also have the courage and step out. And I think that for me is probably one of the best legacies that I can live and leave. So even when I think about what has given me the courage to do the things that I've done, it's only been through seeing the examples of other people and watching their faith and watching their tenacity and seeing how resilient they have been. Have I been like, oh, this is something that can also be a reality for me as well. So that's something that I think I would really love to leave to others. It's this idea of hope.
I love it. I love it. Well, it has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
There's so much more for us to talk about, but how about this? We're going to do a podcast in the garden one day.
That would be amazing. Come on by.
We got to do part two because this doesn't even cover everything that I wanted to talk about. Okay. Y'all just get a taste of what we wanted to talk about for today. Where can folks find you at?
So you can find me on Instagram at Smarty Spice and on Twitter at Brittany the Nerd. And I'm also online. My website is brittanythenerd.com. So you can find me at any of those platforms.
Yay. All right. So we are going to do a really quick rapid fire. Okay. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. So, Brittany, what is your favorite leafy green?
I'm going to go with arugula.
Oh, what arugula?
Rocket. So spicy.
Like a spicy. Yes. All right. Sweet, spicy, sour, or salty?
I'm going to have to say sweet and spicy. I just like them both together.
All right. I'm not mad at that combo. Favorite fruit?
All right. Don't judge me. It's definitely going to be watermelon. Watermelon and service berries together.
I'm not judging.
No, I know.
I love watermelon.
I love watermelon is probably my favorite.
So my mother just sent me a text message. She said, see you next month. See you next month's figs. That's exactly in her words. She literally just texted me. Okay.
Come on by. Come on by.
I do want to bring her. What's cooking in your pot these days, literally?
Grits. I normally always cook grits. Yeah.
And that ain't the blackest answer for you. I don't know what it is.
I mean, I really enjoy eating grits. I mean, because I can eat grits.
Listen, I told you my grandfather just called me not too long ago. Every time I talk to him, granddad, and these are my grandparents in Mississippi, what'd you eat for breakfast? Grits is always part of that equation, okay?
Yeah.
And both of my grandparents' house down in Mississippi, grits.
Yes.
I appreciate your honesty.
I mean, I love grits. I eat grits with greens, grits with fish, grits with vegetables. So grits, I can eat them anytime.
Oh my God. You know what? I actually been inspired. I'm going to buy me some grits, y'all. That is hilarious to me. All right. Thank you for sharing that, Brittany. One way someone can channel their inner edible activism.
So I would say one way that I really would encourage everyone to do is get involved with local planning projects and local planning policies. I've done this entire workshop called What's Land Got to Do With It that looks at the connection between urban agriculture and agriculture and zoning and planning policies. And so if you can start figuring out the planning policies, the zoning policies, that can be a great way for you to get involved and not just and to grow, but also figure out how do you also make sure that you can continue to grow in the future.
What's Land Got? Are you going to do another one of those?
I will. Yeah, I will do it.
Gosh, Brittany, you are dope for real.
Thank you.
Drops mic, you are dope. Thank you again so much for joining me on the show. It has been an honor. I'm so glad this worked out. You're definitely going to see us again because my mother's not going to let me live down. She's going to ask you about watermelon too. She says to everybody, where can I get she wants a yellow watermelon. Okay.
Yeah, I think we're growing those this season.
Oh gosh. She's going to be blowing me up. Okay. Thank you guys for tuning in and have a great day. Peace.
Thank you.
Thank you everyone for tuning in. We are here live on Full Service Radio every Wednesday at 11 a.m. where you can catch today's episode on fullserviceradio.org as well as iTunes and Spotify. Be sure to follow me at Food Talks in Color on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Are you an edible activist? Sure you are. Come join me on the show. I would love to feature you. Just shoot me a DM on the gram. Peace and blessings all. And remember, there is no culture without agriculture.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO. On Instagram and Facebook @Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.